Broadcasting from the commodity capital of the world, Zurich, Switzerland, this is Insider's Guide to Energy.
This addition to Insider's Guide to Energy is brought to you by Fidectus. Go to www.fidectus.com for more information.
Welcome to Insider's Guide to Energy. I'm your host, Chris Sass, and I'm coming to you live today from Energy Risk USA. With me is Alex Pliskin from JP Morgan. Alex, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here today.
So I'm just meeting you for the first time, so I think myself and our audience would like to know a little bit about you. I saw you speak up on stage just a little while ago, but maybe take a minute and tell us who you are and what you do professionally.
Sure. Again, my name is Alex Pliskin. I have been in the energy industry now for well over 20 years. My background is basically, I've spent the majority of my career managing credit risk and investment banking risk for a number of banks, a number of energy companies, including trading. More recently, I found myself working for JP Morgan, managing and working with our clients to help them manage trade and working capital management. And expand opportunities for treasurers, for financial managers in dealing with the uncertainties and realities of managing their cash.
And so everybody's always claiming that the current time is an uncertain time and it's the worst time ever. So how are we doing for cash management in 2023? Are we at an unusual time or are we at a time of predictability?
I would say it is. It's probably an unusual time that I think that it's always, you know, I think recognizing a storm, for example, you know, the Russian conflict war of last year, obviously hard to predict, but that had significant influence in liquidity markets, for this forum here for trading companies, for example, on being able to understand. Volatility in cash positions. I think that has created an opportunity and insight to what treasurers and to what these companies do in order to manage their liquidity on an everyday basis.
And so were a lot of people caught off guard by the current situation, or were people hedging against that and kind of anticipating?
I don't think that they were necessarily prepared. And again, I'm speaking for myself, not from JP Morgan. I want to be clear about that. I would say that it's hard to recognize that type of uncertainty, both from an interest rate environment, from a commodity environment, where nat gas typically trades in a very specific range, to go into an environment where, you know, funding requirements for 10x times that price and volume was quite significant. In terms of, I think it would have been very hard to predict. I don't know if, you know, any treasurer or manager would have been able to see that coming. Again, but that's provided an ability for them to provide more value to their to their senior C-suite in terms of predictability and management of cash.
So have there been changes that people like you are recommending or process changes or model changes that folks are using?
I haven't said it, but, you know, there's a phrase which is, you know, find a way to become more working capital neutral, where your both assets and liabilities become more predictive. And that's using tools such as factoring or receivables financing, inventory finance and management. And then on the liability, do things like look at supply chain finance and dynamic discounting and find ways to either use excess cash on the balance sheet for a higher return, or use financing mechanisms that the banks have been able to provide in order to provide a more predictive cash flow stream. And that has been the trend that we've seen. A lot of banks have been doing this for years. Some of the instruments, what I mentioned in our talk today, some of the instruments that have been used and are looked at have been around for, you know, centuries, actually. They've been refined and looked at again and dusted off. So I would say there's a new opportunity for financial managers to provide more value in their overall business model.
Have you seen, from a liquidity perspective in settlement, any trend to getting things off the books quicker, right? So normally in natural gas in North America, it's like 20 days till settlement from delivery or whatever. Are people trying to shorten that window to help reduce that credit risk at all? Have you seen that trend?
I haven't necessarily seen the trend to change or extend terms for that type of commodity event without, you know, it's usually more the financing environment. Look, the nat gas settles the 25th of the month following delivery. I haven't really seen much of a movement. That's been the standard for years. I don't really see that changing. However, there are specific flows that have, you know, proven to be eligible for extensions, but they have to be very specific. Usually the margins in trading are so thin that pushing any financing cost of those flows onto the actual trading sheet or trader book itself are usually somewhat resisted. So they need to find ways in which to actually finance by whoever is requesting the vehicle. So for example, supply chain finance in the trading environment is probably not as attractive as something like a deferred payment LC, which is basically used to extend terms, but to push the cost of that extension, not on a discounted basis, but actually provide a full notional value to the trader, but where the cost is actually borne by and sourced to the one that's actually looking for the financing itself. That's been the trend.
And then in the last year or so, a lot of folks that I've talked to, and I spend a lot of time in Europe as well, and the back office has been spending a lot of time worrying about margining and margin calls and things like that. Is that something you're seeing on your side of the business as well? Has that been part of your day-to-day for the last year or so?
Again, day-to-day, no, but we've heard, I've been involved with financing conversations where the question has been, you know, we had, when oil went to 120 last year, and gas spiked where it was, there were margin positions that were moving around so dramatically that, you know, I think risk managers had to find ways to creatively manage those positions. So you heard, again, the conversation I didn't hear for a long time, which was an EFP. Let's see if we can take a position off the exchange where we can actually go on an OTC basis with a counterparty, find a way to finance that alternatively than rather this sort of volatility in the daily movement of margin calls. That was the conversation last year, but I haven't heard a direct conversation of saying, look, we need you guys to help us manage this specific position. I'm sure the commodity desk, and I'm not on the commodity desk specifically for JP Morgan. I'm in a very specific function at Intrade Finance, but I know there were a lot of conversations around that topic last year and continue.
And then as we look forward going into the future, you know, I think you alluded to the situation with the Russian and European gas. Are there other trends that you see approaching that we should be considering or looking at?
Well, just the natural development of the markets. So when we had a huge spike in nat gas and there were concerns around the supply chain, there were a lot of topics issues with Europe looking at sourcing for nat gas for the winter. We heard a lot of talk about that. LNG became a very hot topic and continues to be a hot topic in terms of development projects and sourcing. That has been the trend. And so now where you saw, you know, maybe one or two development projects in the U.S. for export of gas, now you're seeing multiple streams of projects that are coming online in the next 10 years. That supply chain and sourcing will probably dynamically change, you know, how nat gas is sourced and used in this country.
And you think markets will change? So typically there's a U.S. market and a European market. Now with the terminals online, does that change? Will there be more of a direct market between Europe and North America, or will they still be separate?
More separate? I think until you actually have a dedicated supply chain that actually materially moves that market. Now, that's a good question. I don't know if I have a complete answer to that. I think you're still going to need infrastructure development here in order to create a specific, for example, market that has a curve that's directly tied to that. But you're already starting to see conversations of pricing specific to that location. And we'll see where that develops. But I think we're still early stages. And you also have to wait till a lot of the train development has come online. Like I said, there's, you know, multiple projects that are coming online in the next 10 years. And I think that's going to take some time to kind of work its way through.
And is that capacity? So one of the phenomena with the recent history was LNG en route getting diverted, right? Whether it goes to Asia or Europe, there seemed to be a lot of competition there. And as these projects come on over the next 10 years, because they're long-term projects, is that facility there? Is there going to be capacity to handle both markets, or is there going to be a lot of price driven by recovery in the Asian market for manufacturing and demand? Because it seems like right now the situation has been, there's been ease of demand globally, which kind of helped Europe through last winter.
That's right.
Right.
That's exactly
so demand
right.
was down in Asia a bit, I think, because of, and in Europe, certainly the warm weather helped. And maybe I'm misspeaking about the Asian demand, but I thought that there was some demand lightening there.
Well, you still see, you know, the conversation I hear is that now the optionality is that, you know, you have LNG, liquid LNG, you know, being going through a liquefaction facility, getting loaded on terminal from Corpus, going out, and then that creates the optionality, both timing and delivery to whatever market is available. So, you know, we hear that, you know, there might be some vessel that's sitting out there that's not contracted on a 20-year, 30-year forward delivery schedule. That creates options to go into wherever the demand market is at that time. That's obviously a short-term issue and opportunity. But I think the longer development of where exactly, you know, which market is going to source material, it's just going to, you know, be based on, you know, whatever the longer-term economics is. I think that's a little harder to predict.
And with things like the IRA and things going on in North America for carbon, you know, carbon neutrality globally, you know, natural gas isn't going anywhere. It's here for a long time. But is that projected to make an impact on this? So you're talking about long-term assets being built at the same time. The Europeans are talking about renewable energy and trying to reduce their demand. So is there going to be an intersection of where that demand drops and these terminals finally get done after Europe has made the move to renewables?
Yes, but economics have to be there first. I think that the strategy is there, and the desire to bring these assets online is there. But again, it is not where we are right now. And so, you know, when they talk about an all above strategy, I think that's going to continue until, yeah, you're going to get to some point where actually economics, those lines are going to cross, and there's going to be a decision to make of what's actually developed or not. But I don't think that we're there yet. The issues that ERCOT, for example, had last year or 2 years, now 2 years ago, with you know, with capacity and with being able to generate when there's no wind, for example, was a huge issue. And I think that we're hearing companies want to develop, for example, solar assets, but they're not there yet. It's going to take time for those projects to get financed and developed, and it's just not an overnight. It's just not an overnight fix. But you're right, that will come at some point, and someone's going to have to make the decision of which type of sourcing is going to have to be financed.
And then from a finance capability point of view, a lot of funds and folks are focused on green and renewable energy. So if you're more in a traditional hydrocarbon environment, are you still able to get the kind of funds you did? I mean, obviously, oil companies had a very good year because of pricing. So I can't imagine there's liquidity issues there at the moment. But in North American nat gas, is there any issues on financing? Is it going towards green, or is there still plenty of opportunity to get financing?
I think a lot of the banks and managers that I talk to in financial institutions, and again, I'm not going to speak to JP Morgan. I'm not in a position to talk about JP Morgan itself. But what I do hear is that the green footprint is being considered in investment decisions. And what percentage of an investment to that company, and so maybe not the investment, but the overall strategy and structure, you know, in terms of ESG, you know, footprint, carbon footprint, becomes part of the financing consideration that's being done by European banks, Asian banks, and you're starting to see it here as well. And it's part of every conversation, whether or not it's the biggest question on ESG is it more than a buzzword? are we actually talking, you know, financing and development considerations based on ESG initiatives, carbon footprint? We're starting to hear it more and more.
So it's starting to weigh in. And then the other thing is we don't really invest in new pipelines for gas in North America. It's not popular to do. So is that a gate that you see that's going to be challenging on the finance side? Is that already impacting when you look at deals or considering things? Because new pipeline construction doesn't seem to be a thing.
Again, the not in my backyard argument, right? So you're still going to have dislocations. You're still going to have gas that's coming out of areas that are not economic or not feasible to move around until there's actually more infrastructure to develop. That's going to be necessary, I think, in order to, improve that kind of supply demand, pricing environment. I think it remains to be seen. It's traditionally you talk to energy developers and traders, they'll say, well, we just need more capacity, both on the power side and on the gas infrastructure side. The question is, who's actually going to make that investment, the political dynamics behind that, and how is that going to work its way through the supply chain?
And then the tools that you use for risk management, are there changes in the tools? Is the software changing? I know there's panels today on ChatGPT and all kinds of things like that. So when you're analyzing and using tools, are you seeing a change in the tools?
I'll be very specific in my answer here, only because I've been out of the specific managing of commodity risk now for a few years now as I've moved to the trade finance side. But, you know, not that long ago, it was the conversation of what's my open VaR position. And then you moved into a two standard deviation movement environment of how do you model that. And then it became a conversation when I last left and when I was spent time at BP. It was like Monte Carlo simulations and being able to go and do correlation curve analysis and all of the quantitative inputs there. I think that taking that and finding ways for risk managers to probably do things more on a real-time basis where you can go and make decisions, you know, as actively in real time as possible. It's probably where it still was moving when I was there, was still moving to, and I don't know if there was conversations around that today, but I imagine it's always the same conversation. I need the information. I need to know where this potentially can move so I can make a decision. I need that as quickly as possible.
Makes sense. And then kind of my last question that comes to mind is interest rates are dramatically changing, or the Fed has been changing to keep inflation in check and things in North America right now. How is that impacting the trade risk and your role on the finance side, or not the risk, but the finance side? Is that having an impact on the industry that you're seeing yet?
It does have an effect on the commodity risk itself. I'm not going to talk to that. Again, not my area of focus, but it does impact what treasurers and finance managers are having to deal with in a real-time environment of what my cash position is, how much am I earning on cash, how much I'm paying for my underlying financing activities. Is there a way to, manage the influx of, if I'm a refiner, I'm having huge margins right now and I have an enormous amount of cash coming in my balance sheet. How do I manage that? On the converse side, when it flips the other way and I'm in a position where, you know, oil goes back down to where it was, how do I manage that position? How do I manage the credit risk of potentially having stress on my overall trading cash position? All of those things have to be considered by a treasury manager and by a financing group that actually funds and finance these flows. And I think it'll be interesting to see as interest rates change. And, you know, I'm not sure if we're at the top yet, but I think that is going to be considered. You hear, conversation I hear from treasurers right now is, well, why do we need a financing instrument if it's going to cost more than I'm receiving on my cash, right? That's part of the conversation. And I think that is sort of the time that we're in right now, but it's not always going to be like that. So the tools continue that we look at and develop are continually discussed.
And to close up then, I guess, you know, we talked about, you brought up traditional hydrocarbons, you talked about oil market, we talked about North American gas. How about renewable gas? Is that something that's coming up on the finance? Are you seeing demand for that yet? Is there any scale?
You're talking about like biogas?
Yeah, biogases.
Not an area that I'm really that as familiar with. I know it's part of the renewable footprint that has been I just have not seen as much development there. I know companies that are very active. My former company, BP, was very active in that space. I'm not exactly sure what the development there is.
No worries. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share with myself and our audience today. It's been a pleasure. Thanks
Mine
again.
Too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. For our audience, we hope you've enjoyed this episode live from Energy Risk USA, and we will bring you more content next time. Bye-bye.